put in all the work, everybody for each other on the field, and then we stay there as a unit and we go towards our goals together as one.
For Martins, it's Sven Angulo to cross into the box. That's one missed it.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, and today is Friday. We had to cancel our Thursday recording, but we are here Friday to break down a match from last week. So we're going to have to dig deep into our memory banks. 2-0 win, our first win of the season, got us feeling pretty good. It did come against a poor Austin team, though, so we'll have to talk about just how much to read into that, and that's what we'll get into today. But here to do all that with me is my good friend Adam. Adam, how you doing tonight?
Oh, we're doing all right. It's good to be back talking soccer with you after missing last week's episode. You know, we finally got a win that we get to talk about for the first time this season.
Yeah, other than, like, other the than Calgary,
but that does not count.
Agreed.
Excited to break down. We finally did something all right.
Yeah, so before we get into it, do you have anything to say about the Atlanta United match? I know it was
no,
2 weeks ago, but yeah, we didn't record on it. Did you even get a chance to watch it?
I did not. I do have something to say about the Atlanta match. I was unable to watch it because Apple TV MLS Season Pass is trash. Absolute trash. I hate it so much. I do not understand why we have to pay $100 for something we previously got for free. And it's worse nationalized cookie cutter content instead of the personalized team-produced and team-focused content and locally produced content with, you know, guys like Evan Weston and Miguel Gallardo and Gabby Amato used to produce for us. And not just that the content is worse, but also the streaming service that I pay $100 for has randomly stopped working at times for me, and that's just fantastic, and Apple support cannot seem to figure it out. So yeah, that's what I have to say about the Atlanta match. It's the reason I wasn't able to watch it. I instead had an hour and a half phone call with Apple support.
Nice. I'm sure that was a very enjoyable experience. Probably more enjoyable than watching the Orlando City versus Atlanta match where we lost 2-0.
What I've heard is it's a close matchup there in terms of enjoyability.
Not good. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch it either. Just because I was out and about, I was busy that night. And so I caught like the first 10, 15 minutes, but then my phone died, so couldn't watch the rest of it. And upon seeing the score, decided, yeah, I'm not going to go back and rewatch that. I'm not going to put myself through that. But no, we're here to be a little bit more joyous and talk about Orlando City 2, Austin 0. First, let's start with the lineup. We had a heavily rotated lineup. Due to international break, Schlegel coming in at the back. We had Kyle Smith at defensive midfield. We had Nico Ladero at defensive midfield. Ojeda getting the start. And then Jack Lynn would be the other non-regular starter, making his first start for the club in MLS. So my only take here is that this kind of lineup was forced. Anything you would add there? I think it's really just because of the international break that we went out like this.
It is partially because of the international break. What I want to highlight is our lack of midfield depth. So notably, we have Felipe and Koševski on the bench. Koševski, I'll figure out how to pronounce his name when he plays a minute. So we had midfielders on the bench, chose to play Kyle Smith at D-mid next to Ladero and kind of like a roaming central mid. And that those are our only two true midfielders that we played. It says 4-4-2 on most graphics you'll find, but I really think it's more of a 4-2-4 almost, or even a bastardized true 4-2-3-1 with Muriel dropping deeper than his forward listing. It's an odd formation that Oscar settled on because I don't think he trusts his midfield that much this year. Certainly not as much as last year. And so he's choosing to play more wing type and nebulous forward type players in hopes of them figuring out how to score goals, hoping that the defenders can just play really well and play on islands, and that the midfield has kind of been reduced to a shuttling role and just, you know, connecting the defense to the attack and possession. And that's kind of good enough. They're not trying to play through press that much. They're not trying to do all these combination plays in the midfield, unless Muriel is involved, which is the exception. They're really trying to progress the ball up the wings more. And when it does get in midfield, just win the ball back and shuttle it to a winger or a playmaker.
Do you think that's more down to just the fact that we were down to Smith and Ladero? Or do you think that's we saw that as well when we had Araujo and Cartagena out there?
If he wanted to play three midfielders, he had Felipe. Could have done it. If he wanted to play any semblance of a midfield.
You know, Felipe, Smith, and Ladero?
I mean, that's kind of what it would be. To me, if Oscar really, really wanted to play with a midfield, Felipe would have started.
Yeah.
This game is not the first time we've seen the kind of 4-2-4. He's gone to it several times in the past few games, especially with Araujo injured, when Cartagena's been in yellow card trouble, which he's been in, I think, every game this year. Cartagena's had an awful start to the season. So because of kind of the erosion of what I think was a top three midfield in the league last year, down to a below average one to start the season, it kind of necessitates, when you hadn't won a game yet, go away from your priors, your preconceived notions, and try something else. And something else is basically playing without a midfield.
Yeah, I want to give some love to Daniel as well, because in the first episode of the season with him, I kind of asked him what his thoughts were on the squad, and he highlighted the midfield depth as an area of concern. So maybe he's the one who put this curse on us. So thank you, Daniel. But he kind of called out that, you know, it's Araujo, it's Cartagena, and then it's Felipe and Koševski, who we've never seen before. And I kind of called out, oh, you know, Koševski did good in the preseason game. Maybe we see him a lot. Maybe we see him, you know, be an option. I called out like Desart, but I was thinking more of like even above Desart, like a fourth string instead of fifth string is what Desart ended up being. And Koševski seems to currently be fitting in that mold. And the midfield depth is starting to bite us with international duty, red cards, and injury as well to Araujo. So I think it's fair that we're stepping away from the midfield right now in our play, just because of all of that going on, as well as the poor results. Agree with you there, Adam.
It's also worth noting that we are broke as far as the salary cap goes. We don't get the extra $2 million GAM like Miami does from the league office. The money that could have been used to sign some more midfield depth, which I, you know, Rico and Muzi are smart people who know how to build a squad. I have to think they would have brought in at least one more midfielder had we been able to sell Duncan McGuire, which would have brought $1.17 million in GAM, which would have been enough to sign probably two contributing squad players at a minimum, you know, two real solid guys, maybe three rotational guys if you want to go that route. But I have to think they would have brought in a midfielder had we been able to get the Duncan McGuire transfer across the line. We've been over that saga in us, and everyone else has been over that saga so many times, we don't need to rehash it. But that, I think, is probably, I have to think, giving the benefit of the doubt to our really good front office, that, you know, that's the reason that we didn't bring in another midfielder other than Ladero, who was a direct Mauricio Pereira replacement this offseason.
Yep. I was also surprised Enrique wasn't out there from the start, but found out he was injured, so that made a little bit more sense. So that's kind of that on the lineup. All right, first half, I don't have much to say, honestly. It was a pretty boring half up until we scored the goal. Not too many big chances for either side. I mean, Austin didn't have any big chances at all, really, in the game, it felt like. I think they had one volley, but I don't remember anything else. And that volley wasn't anywhere close to a goal. Even at the dying stages of the match, they didn't really put up a fight. So really poor Austin side. And obviously, you know, we're starting with this mishmash lineup. And, you know, we didn't do too much up until the goal. The only thing I kind of noticed, I mean, is how we started the match with Muriel. You talked about his positioning being almost like an attacking midfielder on that left side. And I agree, that is really what it looked like. He was dropping really deep. He was on the halfway line a lot while Jacqueline was running beyond him up at top.
He also got central a lot too.
He did get central, yeah. And he looked really good, but I think this might have been his best game in an Orlando City jersey, unless he like popped off against Atlanta. But from what I've seen, this is his best performance, being able to get the ball to his feet and create for us. And I think that this has to be the strategy right now. We have to lean on Muriel while the team is having a slow start. So what'd you make of his performance on the night overall, but also in that first half where he was really getting on the ball a lot?
Yeah, I thought Muriel was excellent in a more playmaking role. He in Italy was never, you know, the central target man, number nine style striker. That's just not his game. He always wanted to move around. He likes to drop deep, get on the ball. He likes to combine. He likes to create. He was much more of a second striker in terms of his positioning rather than the guy. So it makes sense that he is going to want to play that similar type of role in this squad. It also makes a little bit more sense why they didn't necessarily use that DP spot on number 10. If they're going to get a guy like Muriel who can assume some of that playmaking burden, that makes sense. I did a little bit of a rewatch that got interrupted by the U.S.-Mexico game, Dos Acero Vamos, United States.
I'm sorry, Dos Acero Vamos, United States.
Yeah, we have Spanish speakers here too.
It's quite the sentence when facing Mexico.
Yeah.
Continue.
America.
Right.
Is that better?
Yes.
This is the content you crave, Lions blog fans. Anyway. So I rewatched most of the first half. Muriel was basically playing number 10, not even a false nine. He was level with Ojeda and Angulo for much of the first half, never went beyond Jack Lynn, and was also keeping Ladero back in a true midfield spot rather than Ladero creeping up into the attack. Ladero almost never went past Muriel. Muriel was dropping decently deep for, you know, who you'd presume to be a striker. And everything was going through him. The combination play was going through Muriel. It was very much Ladero picked up the ball, and his job was to get to Muriel and maybe play a little give and go with him to get Muriel to a better position to then unlock an attack. I have in my notes in the 7th minute, there was a really nice counterattack where it went. Ladero picked up the ball, found Muriel in a pocket on the left side, a little past midfield, and Ojeda's just streaking down the left. Outruns his defender, Muriel overhits the pass by a couple yards, but it was definitely something where had the pass been correctly weighted, it would have been, I mean, first 10 minutes, a solid, solid counterattacking chance that had a good probability of resulting in a goal. That's the way that Oscar Pereira wants to play. He wants to be solid defensively, turn over the ball, and quickly transition to attack, get those goals in transition, so we don't necessarily have the onus of goal scoring based upon buildup that we don't really have right now. We don't have the midfield for that at the moment. I also thought that Dagernan had a good first half, very, very excellent second half. But we're talking about first half. Good first half. He got himself into the game. He's sneaky fast because he's a pasty white guy and he looks like he's 12 years old. But he's just a dude. I think he clocks like 19 to 22 miles an hour regularly. He is ridiculous. He's like almost Juan fast. Like, people think Santos is the fast one. He's not. Dogger is. But I thought it was really interesting. You pointed out that Muriel was drifting off to the left more. I think that's because they're trying to use – and Dagernan also played attacking mid in Iceland. I think they're trying to use him creatively on the right a little bit. And almost like – you've seen the scene from Moneyball where Brad Pitt's character is like, yeah, we lost this really good character. We're not going to place him one for one, but we'll replace him in the aggregate. Well, we didn't buy a DP superstar number 10 like DR Skater or whoever. We didn't buy one of them. But we can build one in the aggregate. And I think that's the approach this team needs to be successful. And you saw that through Muriel's play in the first half. If we could just goddamn finish. And there were several chances that if the strike wasn't there, then and I think it took about 20 minutes for actually to get a shot off. But if the strike wasn't there, then the pass was overhit or the cross. There was one where Muriel played a combo play to send Lynn out wide, and then he drifted back in the box. And then Lynn's cross was a good 2 yards behind Muriel. It was just barely off. There were a lot of good ideas, but not necessarily the execution that was present. That's been something that's plagued us the entire season, is just the precision of the execution when it comes to getting production in the final third just isn't there.
Yeah, absolutely. On the goal itself, I mean, it was just it felt like a standard play. You know, it didn't feel like a goal was necessarily coming in the first half. I mean, we were turning up the pressure a little bit, but nothing crazy. It just felt like we had a little bit more momentum. And we get the ball down the right. Dagernan puts the cross in. Jacqueline's at the back post, stays onside. Great header on target. First goal from the debut man. What did you make of his performance on the night and the goal itself?
Yeah, I thought Jacqueline looked professional. And I think that is one of the highest compliments we can give him at this point in his career. He came from college soccer, which is not professional. And he has absolutely torn up MLS Next Pro. If you're not familiar, Jacqueline is the all-time goal-scoring leader, which all-time is, what, 2 years? But still, he is the goal-scoring leader since the creation of MLS Next Pro in that league. He is the reigning MVP of that league. He has done everything at every opportunity that he has been given. And he's looked okay in a couple, you know, he's gotten 5 minutes here or there with the first team, but he hasn't really gotten a solid chance to, a fair chance to make an impact. But every time he's been given more than 5 minutes, he's basically scored. And at a certain point, you need to say, hey, this guy is scoring goals at an astronomical rate in this professional league against other professional players. We got to give him a chance at some point. And what does he do? The first time he gets a start at MLS, scores a goal. And I thought his movement was instinctual. He has that goal scorer's instinct for kind of where to be. If his technique is lacking at times, like it was on the attempted cross to Muriel, but he got in the wide position that he knew he needed to be in for that play to work, he just underhit the cross. I had in my notes, he had a nice bit of skill at the 12th minute where he dribbled past a defender. He looked like he belonged on the field. I'm not going to go so far to say that he's going to score in every or even half of the matches that he starts and gets, you know, at least 60 minutes in. I don't think he's going to have a Duncan Maguire-like impact. I just don't think he's that. I mean, he's not super unathletic, but he's not Duncan Maguire athletic. I don't know that he'll dominate MLS because of that reason. But does he have what it takes to be a useful player? Absolutely.
Yeah, agreed. Every time I've seen him for the first team, I've kind of just thought, yeah, he looks fine. You know, he obviously, like you said, he doesn't look like he's going to light anything up. But he's serviceable and someone who could be, you know, that third string striker on the squad. I don't think we need to go and find somebody else. So I'm glad that he's getting a little bit more opportunities this season. He's absolutely deserved it. I was a little disappointed with the way he started the game. I thought, you know, a few poor first touches with balls fired into him, but he really grew into it. Obviously got the goal we just mentioned. Just a good solid header, right? You know, headers aren't easy chances statistically. So it's good that he was able to keep his composure in his debut and get it on target and get the first goal of the match. And it was a real important one. I think if we go in at halftime 0-0, we're all kind of like, what are we doing here? This has kind of been a bland half of soccer. But I think that goal really helped turn up the belief, as we saw in the second half.
Well, that's a very good point, because that was our only goal from the run of play the entire match.
Yeah, the second half was much better, I would say, performance-wise. I'm sure you'll agree. We had a lot of shots. We had a lot of chances. We were getting Austin on the back foot. And like you mentioned earlier, we were still not getting those goals. So, I mean, what did you make of the performance in the second half, especially early on before we scored? We were getting into a lot of good areas. We were putting Austin under a lot of pressure, but we just couldn't get the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, it was. I'm not really sure what to say about it other than.
I'll give my take. Yeah.
Can't fucking score.
I don't know if the dynamics were off on the right side, but we seemed to attack left to right. So we'd get the ball up to Muriel. He'd kind of be our out ball out of the defensive third. And then we'd kind of go through him to get to the attacking third. He'd kind of be our transition piece. And we'd go from left to right and we'd get it out to Ojeda, but mostly Thorhalsson. And then from there, it just felt like the dynamics were off. Ojeda would sometimes run into a space that Daugherdon could run into. Sometimes Daugherdon would cut in, and then Ojeda would have to get out of his way. I almost feel like maybe a right-footed right winger would have been more helpful in this specific game. Not saying it's, you know, something we need long-term, but in this specific game, because we almost needed like the guy on the ball to cut in and then someone to be on the touchline for him to pass to. But Thorhalsson was kind of serving that role from a little bit too deep, and that allowed Austin enough time to get back. And then we were just like lobbing crosses or going back around. So we'd get to the final third quickly enough, but then we just weren't on the ball quick enough to put a ball across the box and get a goal. Instead, we were trying to go on the top of the box and get a shot off. And, you know, Ojeda took a shot Ojeda took a couple shots. One got deflected. Ojeda blocked a shot from Ladero, I think, on accident. And it was just a little bit too slow once we got into that right space. I think Ojeda
killed two of our chances by being in the way, actually.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So I don't know. It just felt like that right side wasn't fully working for some reason. Not sure exactly what the problem was, but it just felt a little too slow for me. And that's why Austin were able to get back and we weren't able to really turn this to a 3 or 4-0 game.
I think your point about Ojeda is very good. He looks very much more comfortable on the left than the right.
Yeah, he does.
Partially because Faku when Faku's in the game, that right side is his unless he doesn't want it. And that's just how this team is going to go until Faku's not on it anymore. And so, and Ojeda is more comfortable playing on the left. That's just where he tends to naturally drift. That's where he makes his most dangerous chances from. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. And when in this game, when Ojeda was on the left and Angulo was on the right, and Dogger just kind of got to boss that right side with Angulo as defensive of a winger as you can have, covering his ass behind him. And then Ojeda was a dangerous outlet option on the left if you wanted to switch the play that way. I thought that's when we looked much better. But yeah, it looked like with, you know, of course, a rotated setup necessitated by injuries and international duty, they looked a little uncomfortable with the positioning. They were getting in each other's way a little bit, which really, unfortunately, killed an incredible game by Dagerdon. Now, let's also take this with a mountain of salt. You have an entire mine of salt. Austin started such MLS luminaries. It's Ethan Finley, who is still in the league. Matt Hedges is still in the league. Diego Rubio is 30. Who else do they have? Alexander Ring is still in the league, and their captain.
Gallagher.
Gallagher still in the league. Still in the league. Sebastian Driussi had basically one leg, and they got 70 minutes out of him because they had no one. Absolutely no one else dangerous. Diego Rubio is like the second most dangerous player, and he's 30 years old and, you know, wasn't that good. They brought in Giassi Zardes off the bench, man. Like, this is not a good team. It's an old team. It's a slow team. And when you got a guy like Dagerdon who's running at them at 20 miles an hour, just eating up space with those strides and taking on defenders full head of steam and creating dangerous situations, and then he cuts it back, Lodero shoots, and Ojeda's in the way. He cuts forward and gets end line and crosses it, and no one's there because Muriel is at the back of the box wanting to play puppet master. Or it's a team that seems like this collection of players doesn't play with each other as in this way a lot. You know, certainly without the presence of Duncan McGuire and Facundo Torres doesn't happen a lot. Or Cesar Rojo in midfield. Or Elder Cartagena midfield. Like, when you miss that many guys, things are going to be a little off. And I think it was a little promising that we showed the complete dominance over a squad like Austin, like we should. Absolute complete dominance. It was not close at any point in the second half where they looked like they were going to score at all ever. It got so bad, Oscar actually brought the kids on to see out the stoppage time. He brought on Kusevski and Shaq Mohammed. Mikey Halliday got a few minutes. You know, it was complete and utter domination. I don't know, you know, kind of what else. We had all the momentum. We had so many chances. But it looked like a team that doesn't know how to play together in the final third.
Yeah, and you beat me to it on that last point. Austin were not good on the night. They were really bad. And, you know, we did our part, right? We defended well, but they did not do much to really put us under any pressure. I mean, I think, again, we defended well as a team, but some of this is just down to Austin being not a great team creatively or anything threatening offensively this season. And so how much stock do you put into this match really at all that as it pertains to our season? With all of our guys out and Austin being genuinely one of the worst teams in the league right now.
I have $1,000 to invest. I invest in this match. How much stock do I put in this match? $20. Maybe. You know,
so what is
maybe
that?
50, maybe 50 if is I'm that, feeling nice.
That's 0.2%, right?
Yeah, not much. I'll go 50 bucks. I'll go 0.5%.
0.5%.
It's better than losing it. It's better than a close win that we eke out at the last second. It's better than making Austin look competent because they didn't at really any point. it's a game we should have won in a fashion we should have won it, minus the finishing, but that can a little bit be forgiven. I would be more willing to forgive the finishing if it hadn't been a massive issue to this point the entire season. So, and I think that's still, other than, you know, we'll see how we do against Red Bulls, who's a much more dangerous team, much more athletic team, much more aggressive team in their pressing. We'll see how the defense does there. If they can pitch shutout or only give up one against Red Bull, I'll feel much better about the defense too. It was kind of like, all right, you passed the test, but you know, you're in 10th grade and the test was made for middle schoolers. A little bit.
That's a good analogy there. Yeah, absolutely. Just a little easy. All right. Yeah, that's all I've got on that. I guess we didn't even talk about it. I kind of skipped ahead, but Lodeiro's goal from the free kick, I mean, it's a beauty, but I don't have much more to say than that. It's just a great free kick.
I think I'll talk about Lodeiro a little bit. I think that he played in a deeper role. I liked how he played better. We've given him some flack on this podcast for his play of the season, particularly his, you know, lack of athleticism at this point in his career and his lack of ability. He's covering a lot of ground, but he's not doing it quickly. No one's questioning his effort. We're questioning his ability to get to a spot on time. And when he's not asked to do that, when he's playing deeper in midfield, when he has the game in front of him, rather than him being in it and needing to work in those tight spaces, when he is able to see it coming, read it, and make a decision and a pass based on his experience and his technical ability, he can still thrive. And I've maintained it through my criticism of him that I think he can be a useful player for this team, and I still believe that. And I think this game showed how the avenue to that is basically having him in a similar role to how Miami's using Busquets, in a role where he can see the game, he can use his vision, he can use his technical and passing ability to get the ball to our more dynamic playmakers, be it Faku, be it Ojeda, be it Muriel, be it Dagordan, be it Santos, if we choose to send him up the left side. Him finding those guys in space that allow them to attack the dangerous areas is how he's going to help this team find success. And I think that was a little bit evidenced on the goal, that he is still an excellent striker of the ball. He can still put it exactly where he wants to. He can still be the leader, and he can go up to Luis Muriel and say, I'm taking this one. And he can come good on it. And it's a goal that we needed, because, again, we did not score in the run of play in the second half. If this is a 1-0 Poppy special, no matter how dominant we look, we're not talking about it the same way. And of course, playing up two goals against this Austin side allowed them to completely dominate the flow of the game. Goals change games and all that.
On your point real quick, yeah, about the Lodeiro goal and us needing it, I actually literally sent out a tweet literally right after the foul happened. And I basically was saying, we need to score a goal. We need to score a goal because we have all the dominance and we cannot afford to let all this dominance go to waste. And then all of a sudden we get hit at the end of the game, like what happened against Minnesota. We needed another goal. He got it literally, for me, the perfect time.
I totally agree. And it shows that this is a guy who is a captain of a Champions League winning side. He knows what it takes to win games when they need to be won. And sometimes that's not going to come from your athleticism or your game plan or your attacking patterns or whatever. It's going to come from a guy who knows how to win saying, nah, this one's mine. And that's what Lodeiro can bring. We need to relegate him to that role, though. He cannot be the guy that's asked to get on the end of passes, that's asked to beat defenders, that is asked to be the dynamic playmaker responsible for creating all the goals. It's not him anymore. He can still be a useful player, though. And that's, I think that is what I really hope Oscar takes from this game is not that we need to be starting Ladero every single game. It's that this is the role in which Ladero can be successful.
Yeah, earlier in the season, I remember there was a game, maybe it was the Montreal match. I can't remember exactly what it was, but we took off one of Cartagena, or I think it was Montreal, actually, the first match of the season, because we took off Cartagena because he lost his head and he went flying into challenges and almost got a red card. And so at halftime, we took him off and we moved Ladero deeper. And I remember thinking Ladero looks way better in this role than he does up in the final third.
I remember that one too. I totally agree.
Yeah. So I think this is where we're seeing his best work right now. And he's not really letting us down defensively either. So for now, anyways. Okay. On to New York Red Bulls. Let's see. New York Red Bulls. I had their information pulled up and then I completely clicked off the screen, but they are having a great start to the season. They are currently
Lewis Morgan is paying dividends for them.
Yeah, they are 3 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss, 3rd place. They just finished a 4-0 shellacking of Inter Miami. That was lovely to see them in the cold, wet rain, and they were not feeling like being on that pitch. It was clear to see. They were playing pretty poor. And so Red Bulls took full advantage, gave them a whooping, and now they're coming into town tomorrow night to look to do the same thing to us, and we will hopefully stop them. Any thoughts on this match?
Yeah, this is going to be a much bigger test than Austin. Red Bulls are a very good team. The only thing they lack is a true number nine at this point, someone who's going to score 15, 20 goals, just put the ball in the back of the net, finish off those chances that are being created by their skill players. Like his name's Venezia, having a really good season too. I think he's got like 5 assists. Lewis Morgan's playing incredible ball, which I'm not really sure why Miami ever got rid of him. It seems to me between him and Campana at the same time, the one to ship out was Campana out of those two, not Lewis Morgan.
Oh, you don't remember why they had to get rid of him? Oh, it's because they weren't roster compliant and they needed some game.
Oh, right. Remember? Yeah, that was when they got caught over Matuidi, wasn't it?
They got caught from Matuidi. They got either a transfer ban. They got a transfer ban, I think, and they got 2 years of GAM reduction.
Yeah.
And they needed to get a million plus GAM, and so they had to sell their best player.
That's right. Okay. Lewis Morgan's having a hell of a season for Red Bulls. They're a dangerous team. They're still doing that Red Bulls press thing. I think for our way of playing without a midfield, it could potentially not play into their hand as much as it did in the past when we were very midfield reliant. I think the way to go is probably to play up the wings a little more and try and bypass a little bit, maybe be a little more direct, as it always is when you play Red Bulls. Try and get an early goal up on them. Always helps against any opponent, especially against Red Bull. I'm going to be keeping an eye on our defense, though. Defense has been an issue. We've been allowing easy goals. We have our internationals back, right? Or no, for this game.
We should, because the Premier League kicks off again this Saturday. So we should have them all back, yeah.
So we got Bricallo back. That's very helpful. Schlegel was all right against Austin. Still Austin. I what I've seen of Schlegel this season, don't want to see much more. Excited to see Janssen Bricallo get, you know, another real test to see how they do. I would probably start Kyle Smith at left back. I liked how he played against Tigres. I think that especially with our patterns of play much more going up the right now, and with Ojeda potentially shouldering more of the creative burden on the left, Santos is a great tool to have, great player to have. Isn't really needed in these types of games as much as Kyle Smith just being an absolute rock in defense. So that's kind of where I would go with my game plan is is tack up the wings, Ojeda over Lodeiro, or, you know, if you actually Caesar's not healthy. So Lodeiro and Cartagena in midfield. I would go, you know, Ojeda on left wing, Angulo on right wing, Faku through the middle, Muriel up top is kind of how I would do it. Just see if that works, but have Duncan and, yeah, and company ready to go. If it doesn't, we'll see.
Yeah, I could see this being a second half game for sure, where first half's kind of cagey, second half's where it's going to open up, and hopefully we can pick them off, but definitely a better opponent. We also have Emil Forsberg to contend with as well.
He might not play. He has what was noted as a small injury on their injury report. It is code for this guy's a piece of shit who abandoned his wife and daughter and is dealing with a divorce.
Yeah, I was going to say that makes a little bit more sense if he's not playing. A small injury, a small flight back to Sweden. Yeah, keep him away. Okay, so that would be nice to not have him on the pitch because he's been playing really well for them this season as well. So
that would be nice. I mean, we might see him. Obviously, I have no idea what's going on in Red Bull's camp or whatever, but I did see the small injury note for them.
Yeah, and actually, I'm surprised he wasn't away on international duty. I'm surprised he's not with Sweden. But anyways, small injury. So yeah, we got our work cut out for us. New York Red Bulls are in great form, and we're just gonna have to contend with that. You know, Austin terrible form, New York Red Bulls great form. So it's a big switch, but I do think we're able to do it. I think, you know, our season's now finally up and running. We're starting to get, you know, full week of rest and probably just starting to get into the rhythm. And this is, you know, no matter how tough we see Red Bulls, we need to start, you know, seeing ourselves as a good team in MLS again. And as we don't have the Champions Cup excuse anymore. And I think we got to be winning this type of game if we want to be where we want to be this season. So let's get our players back. Let's get them on the pitch and let's beat them. That's what I'm thinking, no matter how good they are right now.
I mean, you'd love to win every game. You'd love to win this game. If Orlando City is truly a team that can contend for championships, which those would basically be at this point, Leagues Cup and MLS Cup, I do not see the Shield in our future. Under almost any circumstance.
Not with this squad.
If they're a team that can truly compete for the two trophies left available to them, they'll win this game. I don't think they do. I don't think this team has it. I just don't. For what I've seen from them, too many problems. We're at home, right?
Yeah. So I think a draw.
I think a 1-1 or 2-2 draw. I don't see us keeping a clean sheet against them. It's been chaos at the back at times this season. Glesse's in shocking form. Some people have theorized he switched his gloves this season. He used to wear Adidas gloves. He wears different gloves now. I forget the company. But they look a little ill-fitting on his hands. Some people have theorized that he might not be comfortable with that. I don't know. Something is wrong with him. He's been awful this season.
He's been dreadful.
Numerous goals that last year he could have saved in his sleep. So I don't see us keeping the clean sheet. I don't have particular faith in our ability to score goals against a tough defensive team like Red Bulls. 1-1, I think, is being a little generous. On a neutral pitch, I think they win.
Those are some harsh words, Adam. What the heck? Supposed to be fanboying it. What's going on?
I calls it like I sees it.
Yeah, well, hopefully I'm wrong. Yeah, hopefully my result is the right one. But I think logically, it's hard to argue with what you're saying. we haven't been great this season, but I'm hoping that that was just a little bit too much Champions Cup focus and not enough MLS focus early on in the season, and hopefully we're getting that juice back.
That hope is not unfounded. Champions Cup slumps are absolutely a thing. I that's what I hope too. I hope the boys were just totally focused on Tigres and they were just tired and, you know, and a little heartbroken over the whole thing. And now that their complete focus is on MLS, they'll just, everything will snap into place. I think that's a little convenient for the amount of profit we've seen.
Yeah.
And that's my opinion. I would be ecstatic to be proven wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get into Twitter questions. I asked for two questions yesterday. We got two. First one is from rfenelon3. Do we need to go after an elite center attacking midfielder to be a legitimate threat this season? We'll stop there because the second question is a different question altogether from him. But I mean, to be a legitimate threat, do we need an elite attacking midfielder?
I think we touched on it a little bit when we were talking about Muriel's positioning, and I kind of referenced that we're building playmaking in the aggregate rather than through one guy. There are ways to do it. I mean, we didn't have one last season. We were the best team in the league post League's Cup. Unfortunate the way we got bounced out of the postseason, but we lost to the defending to the eventual champions in stoppage time. Or in extra time, in extra time. And
we had that chance, man. We had a chance.
Oh. Absolutely no shame in how they played last season without an elite center attacking midfielder. Literally, this team last year did it. Do we absolutely need one? No. Do I think this team could benefit from one? Hell yes. But if Muriel is going to play that false nine slash, you know, basically a 10 role anyway, and if he's going to be really good at it, and if Enrique is going to catch on fire and start scoring goals, and if Faku is going to get forward more, and if Ojeda is going to start producing and blah, 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 if all that falls in place, no, we don't need to buy, you know, the next, you know, $15 million can from Argentina or whoever. If you put that guy on the team, yeah, he's going to make the team better. Yeah, that seems to be the archetype for MLS success recently. Most of the teams that have a lot of success have the guy at that position. So that's kind of my answer there.
Yep. I think to be a threat, a legitimate threat, I should say, I think an above average to elite CAM attacking midfielder would be needed. Yeah. Because we're going to lose Duncan, which means Muriel's going to shift back up top. And to be honest, I think Muriel's looked his best so far in a deeper role linking play. So it's either an elite CAM or an elite striker, and Muriel picks up that role is essentially what I'm thinking.
So I was done and then you sparked something in me.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So you mentioned Duncan going. What's the best two best club teams of all time? They're coached by the same guy. It's Pep's Barcelona, Pep's Man City, right?
Yes.
Okay. Right. Neither of those, I mean, I guess Barcelona played with Suarez. Man City played with Sergio Aguero, who scored buckets of goals, was not necessarily a central striker. And Suarez moved it around a ton at Barca too. But they're playing with guys that are, they're playing like five wingers. And they're all moving around. They're playing positionless soccer. I thought that's how we were playing last season when we were at our absolute best. When we beat St. Louis and Cincinnati in the same week and then had that, you know, monstrous comeback against the Crew and we were just curb stomping lesser competition than that, including Atlanta. I recognize some of the same principles, not to say that we were playing Pep Barcelona, Pep Man City-esque soccer totally.
I don't know. I thought we were getting kind of close.
we were getting there. But the point I'm trying to make is that kind of positionless interchange of, you know, total football of guys, you know, left back inverting all the way to Cam and then right wing. You have, you know, Faku was playing striker at times. You had Angulo was inverting all the way under and leaving space for Santos to get into that left wing position and put crosses in. And you had Duncan Maguire running anywhere the ball was going to end up to get to him. If we can play that kind of soccer, then I think you can just put your guys on the pitch and have them run. It's way easier said than done. But there is a route to success without the traditional ball goes to one guy in the center and he distributes it. That's the meta right now on MLS, but it is not the only way.
And that's like, I don't know, 5-6 years ago in terms of the footballing world as a whole.
Tell me who's beating it right now. Tell me a team that is beating, you know, late 2010s Man City. I don't think there is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No one. For sure. Okay. Second part of this question, or second question altogether, from rfenelon3. Thoughts on Giroud to LAFC? As a former Arsenal fan, Giroud is a former Arsenal man. As a current Arsenal fan.
You get that tattoo removed?
No. Happy to see him in the league. I think he's going to do great. LAFC, you know, seem to do pretty good with their scouting department. And this is a really good pickup, I think. You know, still playing for the national team. He was a late bloomer in terms of a player altogether. And so he's kind of going on later into his career because of that. We've seen that before with the likes of Jamie Vardy, Didier Drogba, those types of players who go on to play 38, 39, 40 and still play at a decent level. They usually start their career later and, you know, really start to play games in their career later, I should say. You know, they really pick up steam around 24, 25 instead of, you know, 20, 21, that sort of thing. So I think he's got a couple of years left in him. He's got really good movement. He has that Ibrahimovic quality about him to score crazy goals. And just the dude's a winner. Everywhere he goes, he gets trophies. You know, he goes to Arsenal, we start to win a couple FA Cups. He goes to Chelsea, wins a Europa League, and I believe he was still on the team for Champions League. He's won the World Cup with France. He's won a Puskas Award. He goes to Milan, and they win the Serie A trophy as well. He's just, yeah, a serial winner, and it's a big get for LAFC, in my opinion. Any thoughts from you on LAFC getting Giroud?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you followed him much, much closer than I did. I'm always weary of older European guy comes to MLS and everyone thinks he's going to dominate, because more often than not, that is just not the case. Giroud is kind of the type to have success in MLS. My biggest question is going to be about his athleticism. Is he going to be able to run with the kids? Is he going to be able – he's a pretty strong dude. I don't have real questions about his strength, but – is he going to be able to keep up with the beating that MLS can give, which I think the only other league on par with that in the world is the English Championship. And Giroud is the type of guy in that he's an incredible finisher. He's a spectacular finisher, which I think those are two different things. And Zlatan was successful mainly because of that. And also because he had that Kobe Bryant mentality of, I don't care how old I am, I'm going to be in the best shape of my life possible. And I'm going to run circles around guys 15 years younger than me. Zlatan was like that. I don't get those same vibes from Olivier Giroud, although he is having great success this late into his career. His most recent success in Italy is... Italy's a very technical league, and I think that plays to older players' strengths a lot. The flip side of the coin, so we saw Ibrahimovic come. The flip side of the coin is Gonzalo Higuain, who had the infamous, "Oh, I thought I was going to play with a cigarette hanging out of my mouth" comment. I don't think his mentality is there either. It's probably somewhere in between Higuain and Zlatan, in the miles of space in between there. If he's more Zlatan than Higuain, he'll be successful. If he's more Higuain than Zlatan, he won't.
Very fair, very fair. Yeah, I think it's gonna be just fine for them, and I think it's gonna be fun to watch him in the league. I think it'll be interesting to see, just across short spaces. I think the movement there will kill some defenders. All right, last question at @MichaelDB_ is 4132/442 here to stay? I think we talked about that a bit as well. But do you think it's here to stay, or do you think it's just a short-term thing?
I'm kind of hoping it's a short-term thing. I don't think that it's a recipe for long-term success. There's a reason that not many teams use it. And it's, I think he's referencing the only playing two true midfielders and just basically throwing everyone else on the wings into attack. What I was calling a 4-2-4, I'm assuming we're talking about basically the same thing. There's a reason many teams don't do it. It's not conducive to winning the midfield, which is, you and I agree, is the most important part of the team and the most important thing to do if you want to win consistently and you want to win a lot of games, is you have to have a good midfield. And it's just, you're just not going to have the numbers there. I think it's a short-term solution for a coach that knows he doesn't have the midfielders to be successful at this moment in time. We'll see if Caesar comes back from injury and Wilder comes back from being a dumbass and it all clicks together and they figure it out. And maybe they're going to play a true midfield three with Ladero, even playing like the Rossell six, like we used to do early in the Pareja tenure. Like the MLS's back Rossell role. I could see that being something that this transitions into. But for now, while we're running on fumes in the midfield, I kind of don't see another choice. But that's also why I think it's temporary.
Man, you brought back some memories there with MLS's back. Oh, my sweet prince. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's all we've got. I agree with all that. Anything with Cappies that you want to call out before we end today?
If you're listening to this on the day it comes out, then thank you. I'm going to be tonight, March 30th, 2024, at Wally's Bar and Liquors in the Mills 50 District for parking lot party with the food truck. It's a great event. Bunch of food trucks, local vendors. Wally's a legendary bar in the area. It's a good time. Other than that, save broken strings. Our host for Orlando City matches has been very, very, very good to us. If you remember our Open Cup, Broken Strings and Cappies single-handedly brought that to this city through our series of themed specials every week. Legendary. Absolutely zero credit to the players. It's all me. That Poppy special, not the Cappy special.
Absolutely, man. Cappy special.
No, but on a more serious note, check out the Cappy's Twitter account, X account, whatever we're calling it, at Cappy's Food Truck. That's basically all I've been posting about lately. Is there's a link to the GoFundMe for Save Broken Strings. Absolutely anything that you can give helps. We are about 60% of the way there at this point, I think, maybe a little less. They've happened among some very unfortunate circumstances. Their beer cooler broke. The parts basically don't exist anymore. They're not made anymore. They'll either have to buy rare parts or have them fabricated. And the lack of being able to sell beer is compounding itself financially. And it's a bad situation. And it's an absolutely legendary spot in the history of Orlando City fan. The fandom, it's where the March to the Match for the Ruckus starts, We've had players there, we've had executives there, we've had fan meetups, we've had club events there. Every single match day, I see completely random strangers that don't know each other have a conversation and bond over Orlando City. It's a really special place, and they also happen to serve some of the best beer I've ever had. So anything you can give, again, their Instagram page at Broken Strings Brewery. The link is on the Cappy's Food Truck Twitter. Also, the Cappy's Food Truck Instagram link's in the bio. So save Broken Strings. Help us. They're season ticket holders. The owner's there. They are massive Orlando City fans. If anyone deserves the help of this community, it is them.
Couldn't say it better myself. Thanks for calling that out. I'll try and spread the word as well. There are a couple different venues that I've got. Hopefully we can collectively get them to their target. As you called out, they're about 60% there. So, all right. With that, we'll call it a night. A little bit of a shorter episode, just because it was kind of a blag game for most of the game. Adam, where can our listeners find you at?
You can find me at Kosher Taco Truck on X/Twitter is my most active personal account. And then again, at Cappy's Food Truck on social medias is for following the food truck. And I'm just going to say, we're going to say Broken Strings. We'll be back there eventually. We're not going to put the bad juju out there. We will be back. And as soon as we have confirmation of those dates, they will be plastered absolutely everywhere. So if you're following anything me or Cappy's, you will be able to find it.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right. And with that, thank you for listening. And as always, vamos, Orlando.
Vamos.
To put in all the work, everybody, for each other on the field, and then we stay there as a unit, and we work towards our goals together as one.
For Martins, it's Sven Angulo to cross into the box. That's one mistake.